Hello, everyone. Happy Wednesday.
July.
September 13th. Wow, we're getting off to a good start here. Welcome to episode 20 of The Drop Set. I'm your host, Darren Starr. Thank you for joining me once again, or if this is your first time, hey, thanks for giving me a shot. I appreciate it. So we got a lot to cover today. Big question. It's bodybuilding. We all want to be hardcore. In fact, sometimes you might say it's a contest to see who can be the most hardcore. When does that start to actually become a disservice? When can that be a detriment? We will talk about that. And then also, how many times have you messed up your macros doing something stupid? We will go over some details on that and tell some stories and develop some strategies to make sure, you know, I think the best way to approach it is if you know more of the ways that you can mess stuff up, you can avoid doing those mess ups yourself in the future. So let's see. I am currently broadcasting on, this is Instagram right here. Hi, Instagram. And this is Facebook right here. Hi, Facebook. Hey, Frankie. How you doing, man? Send your comments. I think I should be able to read them for the most part, and we'll see how it goes. So I'm also recording this for posterity. It'll go up on YouTube. It'll go up on the website. It'll go up on iTunes, Google Play, all that good stuff. So I am not exactly Howard Stern. I am not the king of all media, but nonetheless, I'm doing my best. So what's been going on for the week? So lots of stuff. I've been on a tear when it comes to YouTube. So I've been posting as much stuff as I possibly can. I think it was Monday. I think I threw up 11 videos there. It's been about 25 or 30 since the weekend. So what I'm trying to do is just develop an exercise library up there, and it's going to be a little bit scattershot. The workout plans that I will have available soon are going to rely on these videos, so they will all be linked from within those plans. I'm going to try and segment them a little bit on a Pinterest account that I've created as well, so you'll be able to follow me on Pinterest, Five Star Physique, if you want to go ahead and follow me there. There's nothing there yet, but you can get ahead of the game, kind of segment out things, so there will be like a pinboard for shoulders, one for arms, one for legs, etc. So working hard on the YouTube front. Instagram, you know, we're doing what we can there, you know. I always struggle figuring out what kind of content people want. So I'll post something that I think is really good. And, you know, you kind of check your metrics and your analytics a little bit. You see your followers, and so I'll post some stuff, and then, you know, I'll lose like, you know, a couple dozen followers and be like, wow, did I offend? I'm sorry. I don't know what's going on there. Facebook, similar kind of thing. I did a post on Facebook earlier this week where I posted a picture of something that was in the gym, and, you know, I will, full disclosure, I had no idea what the hell it was. And I looked at it for a couple weeks, and I had some ideas, and I'm like, I just can't figure it out. I have no clue what this thing is. And I asked people that worked in the gym. Nobody knew. Like, why is this here if nobody in the gym even knows what it's for? And eventually some dude figured it out, and he's like, oh yeah, check it out. And, you know, it ended up being a pullover bench. So it had a little plastic holder where you can hold a dumbbell, and then a bench where you can lean back, grab the dumbbell, and go into position from there. So, and it's funny because I've been doing pullovers in there just on a regular bench, and didn't know that there was a special thing for it that has basically, as far as I've ever seen, it's only been a drink holder in the gym. I've never seen anybody actually use it outside of that one time when the dude demonstrated it. So I said, hey, if anybody knows what this is, and this is after, you know, I'd figured out what it was, I posted the picture of it and said, if anybody knows what this is, say so. And, you know, the first person to get it right, I'll give you a free assessment. We'll conduct that via email. What I've learned is that, people can be a real pain in the ass, if I can be frank about it. So I got some very smart alecky answers, and people wouldn't drop it, and they were just kind of being difficult in general. So, what that tells me is that I just need to word my questions much more carefully in the future. So changes continuing to happen to the website. There'll be more of those coming this week as well. I'm just kind of going over and updating, refreshing some pages there. Programs. So I am working with somebody to help me get the word out on these, a marketer, and I have committed to her to have the first one available Friday. That's 2 days from today. So it will be on the website. There will be a discount available as well if you join. Wow, I feel like such a shill at this point. I will have a mailing list, and you subscribe to that mailing list, and you can get a discount on the workout plan. So that'll be up and available Friday. knock on wood. We'll see how that goes. The next thing, so I've got my little cheat sheet here, my outline for the week that I'm looking at. The next section is poll results. Yeah, oops. There is no poll simply because I had technical issues last week. The poll got pulled off of the front page of the website. I haven't figured out a way to get the setup back there yet so that it looks appropriate in the way I want to. So nothing on the poll. It's on hiatus for right now. So the next, the two regular segments that we have here, you know, I like to go over some bodybuilding myths periodically. We talked last week about an article that I found on bodybuilding.com that was trying to dispel myths of its own, but instead actually just kind of kept perpetuating these stupid myths. So I wanted to clear that up. This week, it's not so much a myth as it's kind of like, you know, it, this may bleed in a little bit to the rant section, which will be next, but I'll try and keep it relatively brief. It's just regarding the supplement industry, and I guess you could say the myth of the supplement industry. And if you've been following me before, if you've worked with me before, you know my thoughts on the supplement industry. It is a load of crap. They are trying to milk you for as many dollars as they possibly can and give you very little in return that actually has any basis in science. So when you walk into Vitamin Shop, GNC, NutraShop, Complete Nutrition, any of these places, just understand that 90% of what you're looking at is crap. It is crap. It is worthless. I would never recommend it. Not to say that it's completely worthless or it's total and utter crap, but for the price, it is not worth it. Like, it might give you, you know, a tenth of a percent boost. Well, is that worth shilling out $45 for something? I mean, I'm all about efficiency, and that includes efficiency with the dollars that I spend as well. So for me, not worth it. So just be mindful when you are shopping for stuff. If you see claims that look like they're too good to be true, they certainly are, because even the most effective supplements are only going to give you a little boost. Like, creatine has been backed up by so many studies at this point to be effective, and it is one of the very few things that I recommend. Is it a game changer? No, but it's inexpensive enough, it doesn't really matter. It's not going to break the bank. You can get, you know, a 4-month supply of it for like $15. So yeah, why not at that point? We'll take that little boost, sure. Even branched chain amino acids, you know, now the latest research indicates that they don't really do anything, which I've kind of felt that for a long time just based on my own personal experience with it, but I continue to use it just because I'm like, hey, I like the flavor. So they kind of get you hooked on that, I think. So just be careful about supplementation. Less is more pretty much in all cases. I do have a little rant. This is, I will try and keep this brief as well because I know that's not why people are here, but it's a chance for me to get something off my chest. So I joined a new gym recently, and I love it. It's a great place. But at this gym and at other gyms that I've worked at before as well, there's a problem with group fitness and classes. Not that they are bad necessarily, but they have a tendency to kind of bleed out of their area and make the gym a giant cluster F. You will notice also I've started censoring myself a little bit because YouTube doesn't like it. So there's a little self-censoring going on involved here. So this particular gym, they don't have a group fitness room per se. They do have a room, but it's small and there's nothing in there. I think I looked in there today and there were like two stability balls and a BOSU ball in there, and that was it. So they have this area where the group classes typically take place, but invariably they spill out from there. They come and raid the dumbbell rack. They use the benches over by the dumbbell rack, and you've got these people in there on the floor in front of the dumbbell rack doing hip thrusts. And I'm like, what the hell are you doing? And why is the person leading this class having people come over here and do this? So it's just one of those things where we, you know, me and some of the other guys in there, we just kind of look and we're like rolling our eyes. Like, they're putting in good work. That's great. But, you know, a class needs to be contained to a specific area. And when you let it explode all over the whole gym, chaos ensues and everybody gets pissed, including this guy. So anyway, okay, I'm done. Now it's on to the more positive stuff. So topic number one for the week. How 10 minutes. Okay, that's enough. That's enough crap and ranting for the week. So topic number one, how hardcore is too hardcore? This is maybe not the discussion that you think it's going to be. So let's talk about, you know, as a coach, I work with a lot of people over the course of the year, and I maintain very meticulous records on everything. So, you know, I posted a before and after picture from one of my clients this last week, which included her before picture from, I think it was 4 years ago. And she said, "I can't believe you still have that." I'm like, "Of course I still have that. I save everything." So I also save records from all of my past clients. So that folder is now big enough that when it comes time to do a data backup for me, I don't back that one up. First of all, if I lose it, it's not the end of the world, but also it's large. So you do this for long enough, you're going to have a lot of former clients. So it's just the nature of the beast. Just like with anything, there's always turnover. So, you know, I try and do everything I can to, you know, help people reach their goals. And sometimes that's short term, like 3 months, 6 months, a year sometimes. You know, I have people that I'm working with right now that I've been with for several years straight without a break. So it just depends on what your goals are and how well you feel we're working towards those goals. So invariably, people will quit. You know, when you hire a coach, it's not a lifetime commitment. You know, you will quit at some point. What are the causes of it? What makes people quit? So some of the things are completely out of anybody's control. You know, significant injury. You know, like I got my hand stuck in a piece of machinery at work. Okay, yeah, I mean, that's going to pull you out of the gym for a little while. I get it. You know, changes in finance, job, moving overseas, change in deployment status, having a baby. All these kind of things are, you know, legitimate things that might make you say, "Hey, I need to adjust some things. So thanks, coach, but we're moving on." Cool. Absolutely cool. The next most common thing, and I kind of refer to those as, you know, the out of my control kind of things. So there's nothing that I could do better as a coach to prevent anything like that from happening. The next most common cause is, and I will paraphrase here, but generally speaking, it's something like, "I just can't put everything into this right now," which, you know, as a coach, I want to make sure, I mean, everything that I do with clients is month to month. There's no long-term commitment to anything like that. So, you know, it's like somebody who's hired you as an at-will employer, they can fire you at any time. Any client can let go of me at any time. So you don't need to give me a reason. And oftentimes, you know, some people will just disappear without saying anything. I'm like, "Oh, thanks. All right, cool." Apparently this meant a lot to you. That is something that, you know, well, absolutely, you've got control over that. And if that's a good enough answer for you, that you just can't put everything into it right now, cool, I understand that. But on its face, it is not something that I accept as being a really good reason to not do this. And then invariably, it comes down to a phrase like, "I need to give something like this 100% or I just can't do it." And that is something where I will fight an argument like that to the death. And I will usually lose, but I will fight it. Because if I gave that argument to people, invariably, I would never get anywhere. I mean, if it was always, you know, "I'm going to do this 100% or I'm not going to do it at all." You know, I mean, what do we apply that to? Does that apply to an individual day? Does that apply to a week, a month, a year, whatever? I mean, what period of time does that apply to? So there will be days where, you're like, "I'm sick." Okay, well, am I going to quit everything because I'm sick today? No. I mean, come on. Don't be stupid. Or, you know, this week, this sickness has extended and, you know, I've been sick for almost a week now. Okay, well, that's great. But you've got ambitious physique goals. Is that going to make you quit? Probably not. Or, you know, "I'm moving this week," you know, like me in end of June, early July, selling, buying a house, moving, etc. You know, I still got in my workouts. My diet took a little bit of a hit. I won't lie. So, you know, did I quit? No. Should you? No, absolutely not. Now typically if you get into something where it's more like, you know, there's a month where I just can't apply myself. Okay. Usually this may start to fall into that category of things that are out of my control, like, you know, job changes or whatever. But, oftentimes it's just people feel overwhelmed by everything that I'm asking them to do. Like, yeah, you've got a meal plan, you've got to do your cardio, you've got to hit your workouts, etc. All that stuff is required. It's not necessarily optional if we want to continue making good progress. So, if you're feeling overwhelmed, walking away from the whole situation, whether it's, you know, whether you're working with a coach or whether you're on your own is largely irrelevant at this point. you are doing this, and by this, I mean, you know, engaging in some kind of bodybuilding endeavor where you're trying to make improvements to your physique in the long term, you made a commitment to yourself in doing that. And so deciding, you know, for this 3 month period or whatever, I just can't do it, you know, it's too much, et cetera. What you need to do instead is figure out why it's too much and then how to make it less. And just not doing it invariably is not the answer. Now I have worked with a lot of people who have given me this answer before. For this reason, I just can't put everything into it. I let me sort some stuff out and I'll come back to you in a few months. And I can tell you from experience that when that happens and they do come back, and they don't always, but oftentimes they do, you know, pick somebody up a few months later that I've worked with before, almost invariably, I would say 85-90% of the time, they basically did nothing for those 3 months or however long it was. You know, I've had people with breaks as short as a month and some, people with breaks as long as, you know, 2 years, and then they come back. So invariably the time was not spent productively. Either they were kind of half-assing it, kind of applying themselves, but not really. Or they just, you know, I quit going to the gym, I stopped, and then they just look like they've never set foot inside a gym before. So that is something that just tells me that, you know, the priorities aren't there and we need to adjust that. So, and that's not something that I can do. You know, I can't change your priorities. I can't shift things around or anything like that. I can't make you want something anymore. And one thing I've noticed, it's very easy for people to say how badly they want this. You know, like, I know what my goal physique is and I want it and I'll do everything I can to get there. And then when the rubber meets the road, you can sort people into two categories, the ones that'll do it and the ones that won't. So, and usually it's pretty clear. Like, I've had people that bail out of a program after less than a week. And these are people who talked a great game initially, like, I want this more than anything. I will do anything you ask. And, you know, it comes time to do our first check-in and they're just completely gone off the radar. They never emailed me back or anything like that. I'm like, what in the world? But I've seen it happen enough. And then you've got people that talk that game and then they bring it as well. And they don't just bring it, but then they're asking for more. Like, how can I do this better? How can I work harder? I'm like, all right, now we're talking. Now we're on to something. So, hardcore is good as long as you have reasonable expectations and you put limits in place and you accept that less than 100% is still a valid effort. Not long term, but for periods of, you know, a day here and there, maybe you've got a week, a couple week stretch. Yeah, I mean, you can give less than 100% and still progress. I'm accepting, for the sake of this argument, that 100% is in fact the maximum and that we can't actually give 110% because we can't. But, you know, if you, you know, maybe certain elements of your plan kind of fall by the wayside a little bit. Like, maybe you focus a little bit less on your diet, but you continue to apply yourself in the gym. You continue to crush things as hard as you can. Maybe you don't have time to hammer out as much cardio as you should, as much as your coach is asking you to do, but you can still stick with the diet. You can still go in and crush the workouts. And sometimes we do have to prioritize things a little bit. What I find to be the most common cause of the mindset where people say, you know, if I can't give everything to this, then it's just not worth it to me, is, you know, it's typically laziness. And that sounds really harsh, and I would apologize for it if it weren't true. Now, again, not universally, there are always exceptions, but it's usually just, you know, all the pieces are there, you know, all of the things that would enable success are there, they are all present. But it's just a lack of application, and it comes down to just, you know, being a little on the lazy side. And, you know, that's not me judging you as a human being. It's just judging me on your ability to follow through on your commitment that you made to yourself. People often say, you know, if we have a check-in and it hasn't been a good week, they apologize to me for that week. And the first thing I'll always say is, don't apologize to me. You don't owe me anything. Apologize to yourself, because this is a commitment, a promise, you know, a goal that you established for yourself, and that's what you need to be focusing on. Don't worry about, you know, disappointing me or letting me down. I mean, those are phrases that I never want to hear from anybody. I mean, all I'm here to do is to put a plan forth for you and help you follow through on it. And you know, sure, I've got investment in the success of everyone that I work with, but you know, if you don't hit something perfectly, I'm not disappointed. I'm gonna approach it from an analytical perspective and say, okay, it didn't go quite according to plan. Why not? And how can we make it better the next time? So, let's see. Yeah, one thing that I wrote in my outline here is, you know, you have to understand and accept when less than a 100% effort isn't necessarily realistic. And then be honest with yourself. And this applies to just about everything in bodybuilding. You know, when you're tracking your food and logging your diet, you need to be honest with yourself and not leave stuff out of there that you wish you hadn't eaten. You need to be honest with yourself when you log your cardio minutes. So if you're supposed to do 30 minutes and you do 25, but you write that you did 30, be honest with yourself. If you can't be honest with yourself, you're going to find yourself very limited in your capacity to proceed before too long. And be honest with yourself as far as the quality of the effort that you're putting in on a daily basis. And if it's less than what you feel is your max, be honest with yourself as to the reason why, and then allow yourself to get away with a little bit less, but then also try and identify the reasons why you aren't running on all cylinders, if that makes sense. So the main thing is, you know, bodybuilding, if I can borrow the cliche and recycle the phrase that I have uttered 500 million times, it is a marathon, not a sprint. And you cannot run a marathon at a sprinter's pace. Now, if you compare the speed of somebody who's doing a 100-meter sprint and the speed of somebody who's doing a 26 and change mile run, you know, there's a huge discrepancy in the speed there. So, you know, bodybuilding isn't that kind of marathon where you can kind of just slog away and, you know, go at, you know, 40% your usual pace. But you need to accept that you cannot go hardcore 100% all the time. And the people that I'm not talking to here are the, you know, 0.2% of people out there who can. Some people can. Those are the people that really, really, really succeed at the highest level in bodybuilding. That's what makes them succeed. That's what helps make them successful, is the fact that they can tap into that overdrive gear and stay there. That is not a normal human characteristic. So while you may want to be in that category, chances are, statistically speaking, you are not. And that is okay. I am not either, and yet I continue to go about my business and do as much as I can and put in a quality effort day in, day out as best I can. And some days that is, you know, not something that I would necessarily be proud of. let's go all the way back to Sunday, 3 days ago. I went in for a leg day. I was ready to crush it. I went in there with the right frame of mind. And then I got into, you know, I got in the car actually. I started to feel, you know, my stomach was a little upset. My head was kind of starting to hurt a little bit. I'm like, well, I already ate all my pre-workout carbs. So, and I've already got my post-workout carbs here and I really want to eat those. So I guess I should go and do my workout. So I went and did it. And was it impressive? No. Was it embarrassing? Oh, yeah. I mean, it was I'm going to irritate the YouTube censors out here. It was a shit show effort. It was not good. It was probably one of my lousiest workouts that I've had in a long time. Just couldn't get into it. And so what you don't want to do in a situation like that is say, screw it, I quit. I'm not doing this. I'm not coming back to this stupid gym. And, you know, it seems dramatic, but I have talked with people and worked with people who will let one workout destroy their entire week. And once you have a week that is kind of gone to hell, you may notice that it's easier to duplicate that week and have another week that goes to hell than it is to turn the corner and get back on your game. So that's one of the things that I think as a coach, I can bring a lot of value in, is helping people realize and recognize the reasons for their struggles and helping to turn those struggles around and learn lessons from those. And you know, I always say that whenever you fail, quote unquote, that's just an opportunity to learn from it and get better at it, because whatever presented that challenge is going to present itself again at some point. And if you've dealt with it before and you remember how you dealt with it and it was a successful handling of whatever that was, then you can better be prepared for when it comes around again, because almost certainly it will. Unless your struggle was caused by literally a lightning strike, in which case, hey, you survived. Great. You missed the gym for a few days. Good job. You know, you probably won't have to deal with that again. But most of the things that will cause issues or, you know, pull you out of the gym or pull you off your diet are things that will come about again. So be prepared for that. Just know when to accept a sub-maximal effort and understand that that is okay. And as human beings, that's part of the game. So, okay. So please be hardcore, but within reason. Don't try to be the most hardcore person there is. Don't expect yourself to be that person all the time, because there will come a time when you will let yourself down if that's the expectation. So just be reasonable about it. All right. Let's talk some macros here. So, raise your hand if you've ever made a dumb mistake when it comes to tracking your macros. Those of you listening and not watching, I am raising my hand currently. So there are a lot of ways that you can mess up your macros. Some of them are fairly stupid, mundane, dumb things, and some of them are a little more exotic, esoteric things where you may not even realize that you've done it. Maybe ever. Who knows? I've noticed things conducting audits of people's macros. I will, with clients, conduct from time to time a macronutrient audit for people that I have that are working on flexible macronutrient-based plans. So I give them their targets. I say, here are some additional guidelines that I want you to hit as well, so it's not just a total free-for-all. You know, if you get 150 grams of carbs in a given day, I don't want all of those in your first meal, for example. You know, if your macros are 150, 150, 50, I don't want you having one meal that hits those macros. That is not productive. So I do provide additional guidelines beyond just the numbers. And so what I will ask for consistently from clients in their check-ins is give me a day-by-day breakdown of what your macros were for each day. And there are some people where they will send me that, and the numbers are exactly the same every day. And what I notice when I see that is, okay, they're having the same stuff every day. And I say, kudos, golf clap, you're making it easier for yourself when you do that. Now, you're not taking advantage of a whole lot of flexibility in the plan, but you know, I was working with somebody earlier. We had our check-in, I think it was yesterday, and I commented like, hey, the macros are the same every day. And she responded back like, yeah, actually, and I just changed my plan. Here are the new numbers for it. So you've got the ability, you've got the wisdom and the experience to adjust your plan as you see fit, but trying to make it a little bit more consistent day to day, you're decreasing the degree of difficulty. When you do that, you set up your plan, and then you don't necessarily have to track your food every day, except when you get sick of something or you need to swap something in or out, then go ahead and track stuff again. But it just it lowers the degree of difficulty a little bit for people doing a flexible plan. And then I see people who their numbers are different every day, and invariably when they do that, they're going to go outside the margin of error on certain numbers. More often than not. I do have a few exceptions for people who, I'm thinking of you, Sam. Actually, I don't know if you're watching right now. I don't think you are, but she, her macros are different every day, but they're always within a couple grams of the targets. it's remarkable. So she, you know, she varies it up daily, but still stays within the strict confines that I set for her. So she does a great job with that. Definitely a little bit harder, a little bit more work, but you can do it as well. So the more experience you get with tracking, the less common these mistakes become, but still they can creep in. And usually it's just, you know, it's not that you don't have the knowledge. It's usually just like, oh, I didn't see that, or oh, oops, I picked the wrong thing, that kind of thing. So the biggest thing and the most common thing that happens, and this is usually a rookie mistake, is when you are tracking usually carbs, using something like, you know, MyFitnessPal, which is the app that I recommend because it's the one that I have the most familiarity with on a nuts and bolts level and how it works. when you use an entry from their database, making a mistake when it comes to selecting a cooked versus an uncooked carb. So, and of course, the one that is most commonly a problem there is rice. So people will add into their database rice uncooked. Okay, great. And then they go and measure it out, and suddenly it's like this tiny little serving, or, you know, the other way where they end up going over double on their carbs, which is probably more common. So, that's the big thing. Now, that also applies to oats. It applies to potatoes. I remember doing an Instagram post a few months back where, and, you know, just for the sake of argument, I took this thing of potatoes that were all chopped up, and I weighed it, and then I cooked it, and then I weighed it again, and it was down to about 70% of its uncooked weight. So what that says is, okay, now when you log that as a flexible dieter, when you go and log that, you better use the right entry. Like, you know, don't weigh your potatoes or your rice or anything else cooked and then log an uncooked database entry. That is a huge mistake that's going to cause wide margin of error. Oats are another one that certainly falls prey to that as well. Although usually that's one that people get right, just because I don't know why. I think it's just because that's one that typically we measure out uncooked. Well, I think most commonly that's one food that isn't mass prepped, actually, now that I think about it. So, rice, you'll usually cook up a huge batch of that. Often potatoes, you'll cook up a large batch of that as well. So you may be, initially putting everything in uncooked and then logging that entry. But then when you actually go to serve it up, you're serving up a cooked portion instead. So with oats, it's usually done single serving at a time. So you log whatever it is that's raw, uncooked, and then you cook it and then you eat all of it. So it's the same calorically speaking. So was that okay? I didn't know if we had a power outage or if my screen's just turned off. So we're good. So that's one. Another thing, and this is similar, is with protein sources. So oftentimes when people log their protein sources, and I'm talking, chicken, ground turkey, stuff like that, the ones where there's a lot of variance and fluctuation, chicken breast. So if you just, next rainy day, go into MyFitnessPal and just do a search for chicken breast and start looking through the entries and just, let's say, a 6-ounce portion. So look through the first entry you find, plug in a 6-ounce portion and see what the macros are. Now go to the next entry, plug in a 6-ounce portion and see what the macros are, and continue to go through the list like that and see what kind of ranges you'll end up with. You'll see anything where you'll find an entry that has 4 grams of protein per ounce up to 9 grams of protein per ounce. Some that for a 6-ounce serving will have 0 grams of fat, and some that will have 12 grams of fat. So there's a huge variance and huge fluctuation in those numbers within the same database, just because you've got all these entries in there. But an ounce of chicken is an ounce of chicken. So some of those numbers are right and some of them are wrong. And then there's some gray area in there. One thing I always do is I make the assumption that if there is fat on that chicken, I'm pulling it off. So it's really easy with the way that I cook it up in the slow cooker. It does its thing, it cooks, et cetera. You drain all the fluid out of there and then you pull it out. And when you pull it out, you'll see that like the fatty chunks, they just kind of fall off. And it's really gross and disgusting. And it's probably, one of the low lights of my week, just because I find it really, really disgusting for whatever reason. But all the fatty chunks, they pretty much just fall off, and then you can use your fingers to kind of swipe off some of the other residue. It's really nasty. But then what I'm logging is a really lean piece of chicken breast. So what I'm packing up is a really lean cut. So I always err on the side of going a little bit leaner. So for like a 6-ounce serving, I will assume that that chicken breast has 2 to 3 grams of fat. Not zero. And those trace fats matter, especially because typically when we're cutting, our fat targets are going to be relatively low. So if you have, 3 chicken meals throughout the day and there's 3 grams of fat in each of those, pretty soon, you've got, maybe 25% of your fats for the day eaten up in trace fats from your protein sources. So, and then you throw on a couple grams here and there in a protein shake, and then suddenly, you don't have as many fats left over as you might have thought you would if you had logged one of the lower fat entries from the database. Similarly, you don't want to log one of the higher fat entries, because then you'll be falling under, because certainly your chicken breast in a 6-ounce serving does not have 12 grams of fat. So understanding that, and then also making sure that you're logging an appropriate entry as far as cooked or uncooked, much like with the protein sources, with the carb sources. And then also with those protein sources like chicken, I always assume ballpark an ounce of chicken is going to have somewhere between 6 and 7 grams of protein. So you can use that and the fat number to kind of make sure that you're using an appropriate database entry. That's the key. And then once you find that, bookmark that sucker and use it over and over and over again. Don't vary. Don't use additional ones. Now, kind of a corollary to that is some of those entries in the database are just bad. They are really, really bad. And you will find those for everything from protein sources to carb sources to veggies. I've seen somewhere where a cup of chopped zucchini was 280 calories and somebody logged that. And I'm like, wait, hold the phone. We have a problem here. This is not correct. So pass everything through the smell test. And if you just have some basic general ideas on, you know, what kind of macronutrients there are in a basic food, like if you find an entry for chicken breast that has a whole bunch of carbs, stay away because that is not correct. If you find, you know, like a database entry for any kind of an oil that has anything other than just pure fat, stay away because that's wrong. I don't know what kind of monkeys insert those things into the database, but they do find their way in there. So before you log anything, check it. Another thing is using the barcode scanner. This applies especially with things from Trader Joe's, I've noticed, is I will scan something, and then oftentimes, you know, the instinct is, okay, I scan it. Well, it's in the barcode. Cool. Log that thing. Check it first. Check it. I have logged, oh my goodness, a lot of things from Trader Joe's specifically, where you scan it and it pulls up a completely different food, like not even related, has nothing to do with this. Like I'm trying to log a prepackaged chicken breast and it comes up with like some kind of cookie instead. I'm like, well, I wish, but no, not so much. So just do a double check, make sure it's the same food, and then look and make sure that the macros line up with what's on the packaging. So we always want to rely on the packaging, assume that it's correct. And we have to make some assumption somewhere, and then make sure that the database entry that gets pulled up from the barcode scan matches that. That's the key thing. Now, along with that, this is a nice dovetail into the next thing, which is serving sizes. So oftentimes, let's say you scan something in, it's a barcode, pulls up on your phone, you compare it, and the label on the box says, you know, there are 4 servings in here, and each serving is 2 ounces. Okay, great. And then you pull up what's scanned in on the barcode, and it says there's 1 serving, and it's 8 ounces. Okay, so suddenly, if I log that, then it's going to end up coming in at 4 times what this one was on the box. So just because the entry was read in from a barcode scanner does not mean that everything is going to line up correctly. So you may have to do a little math if the serving sizes are not in the same delineation. Like, you know, sometimes the package will say, you know, a serving is 30 grams. And sometimes when you scan it on the barcode, it will say a serving size is 1/4 cup. You're like, wait, okay. How did that happen? And then oftentimes, under that serving size, there'll be different options. And then you can find one in there that says, oh, here's my 30 gram serving. Great. One of those, log it and you're done. But always check the serving sizes. This is another big mistake. A client of mine, Kyle, hey Kyle, how you doing? He told me about something that he logged. I think it was an English muffin that he was having with his breakfast or something like that. And he'd been logging it for a while. Everything was good. And then he realized, oh, a serving is 1/2 of an English muffin. Who the hell has 1/2 of an English muffin? I don't know. I don't. I'm not a communist. I don't eat 1/2 of a muffin. Come on. But just make sure, because sometimes when they package those things, they do really dumb stuff like that. So it's almost like they're trying to trick the flexible dieter. And that is a really good and easy way to do it. So just be mindful of that. Serving sizes can be the death of you. So really, really perform your due diligence. If you tend to eat a lot of the same foods, you will find that you become very familiar with these things and you won't have to pay quite so much attention. But then when you bring in something new, it's always a crapshoot as to whether or not it's going to be easy or if you're going to have to do a little bit of math and do a little bit of cleanup on the label. Measurements, volume versus mass is another way to go. So this is less of a, this just sounds like it digressed into a physics lesson here or something like that. Sorry, that is not my intention. I'm going to try to make this as fun as possible. Let me break out the visual aids here. No, I'm just kidding. So volume versus mass. There are certain things that I measure with volume. And the concern there is one of void space and compressibility. So imagine this. You've got some cooked rice, okay? You're going to scoop it out, and you're going to say, okay, here's a cup of cooked rice. Great. And then you're like, I'm kind of hungry, so let me just mash all that crap in there. Oh, what do you know? I've made some room. Now I can get a little bit more in there. So that's compressibility. So for that reason, most foods I do not measure volumetrically. The exception there would be liquids and actually dry oats, just because dry oats don't have any water and they don't compress a whole lot anyway. So most things I measure by mass, so grams or ounces on the scale. even things like peanut butter, I measure by mass. And the way I do that, because the last thing I want to do is spend my entire life washing out with soap the tablespoon that has the residual oil from the peanut butter on it. So it's a pain. So what I do is when I have peanut butter, usually I'm just going to eat that crap straight off the spoon. So I will stick the jar of peanut butter on the scale, zero it out. And if I want to get 30 grams, I'm just going to stick my spoon in there and spoon it out until the scale reads negative 30 grams. Great. You're done. There's your ounce. You're good to go. So, and yes, I know an ounce is 28 grams, not 30. Leave me alone. So volume versus mass is a big thing. Just err on the side of using mass for most things and you won't go wrong. With volume, void space is a concern. So especially with things like, cereal, for example, you've got your, let's use a good example here. So Cookie Crisp, can you tell I'm an inner fat kid and I really wish I was just 9 years old still. They're kind of big, right? So you have a cup of those, and in that cup, there's going to be a lot of empty space. So measure that out by mass so you don't cheat yourself. I want 45 grams of this stuff. I don't necessarily want a cup. I want to make sure that I'm getting everything that I should be getting, spaces included as well. So pretty much for most things, I would say go with mass and not volume. So save that for fluids and maybe a couple other things. And this is one of the big ones. This is less common, but this is also probably the worst way to go about doing stuff. There's two things here, actually. First of all, tracking your things on paper. And I've seen people that do this, and I've known people that did this. It's when you use MyFitnessPal, it's not immediately clear that it's going to show you what all of your macros are. You may think that you've got to pay for the premium version in order to do that, but all that functionality is in there in the free version. So I've seen plenty of people write their stuff out on paper, and your margin of error goes way up when you do that, because invariably, none of us are math wizards, and even when it comes to just basic addition, it can be a problem. And especially if you want to then say, oh, well, I'm going to have 1.5 servings of this. Now we're talking multiplication. Oh, God, this is getting really hard. So never, ever, under any circumstances, track your macros on paper. It is 2017. We have the ability to do pretty much everything by technology, so let's take advantage of that. Now, another thing, and I do know some coaches that actually work this way, is they'll give you macros and say, for your protein source, we're only going to track protein. For your carb source, we're only going to track carbs. And basically, we're going to ignore trace macros. So we're going to ignore trace fats from your protein sources. We're going to ignore trace proteins and fats from your carb sources. We're just going to look at the main macronutrient for all these foods. This is usually accompanied by an approved list of foods, which I strongly discourage as a way of thinking. I just don't think that's productive. It's not a good way to go about doing it. The problem there is there's kind of like, some assumption that then those trace macros just don't count, I guess. But they do. You're still ingesting them. They still contribute to your daily caloric totals. So what you're doing there, if you follow a plan or a strategy like that, is you are just greatly increasing the acceptable margin of error. And that's, never a good thing. It's nice. It's relaxed. It makes it easier. It makes it easier to then track those macros on paper, I guess. But we've already said that we don't want to do that. Let the phone with the nice processor in it do your calculating and your math for you. Way easier that way. Nicer. It's better on the environment. Fewer dead trees. And the math is more accurate. Ignoring trace macros is a bad way to go. Because they do still count. And then also, let's say if on your approved food list is like avocado. Okay, great. Well, that would primarily be a fat source, but it's trace proteins and trace carbs are not insignificant. And if over the course of a week, if that's something that you have every day, that's going to add up. So, it is an unnecessary rule. I don't necessarily get why somebody would have somebody do that. But I know there are coaches out there that work that way. So, I guess it's simplification, but still, if you are using something electronic, something digital to track your macros, you don't need that kind of simplification. So those are the primary ways in which people mess up their macros. So, most of us, we need to make some of those mistakes ourselves before we realize it, but just be careful. That's the big thing. Don't drink and log your macros because bad things happen. It's you know, we have to make those mistakes, and that is okay. You know, you can make those mistakes, but then recognize them, pay attention, go back and look at your numbers the next day if you need to. You know, if something doesn't look right, you know, there's probably a reason for that. You know, if you're working with a coach, someone like me, you know, if I'm slow in asking for a review on your macros, send it over to me. Let me see it. Just because you can't look at those things too closely. I mean, there is a point where you can kind of get lost in the details and it's less productive, but that usually comes later. And most of these macro mistakes are made earlier on in your journey. So when you have, you know, just a handful of days or a few weeks experience tracking this stuff is when you're going to make more of these mistakes. So just recognize what they are, be cognizant of them, and then go ahead and make them, but then be aware that you've made them. So, okay, so we covered a good bit of ground here today. So we went over all the usual stuff, and then we talked about how hardcore is appropriate, and then ways that you can screw up your macros. So if anybody has any ideas for the show next week, currently it's a blank slate. I have nothing in my mind. I'll come up with some ideas, but I'd always love to hear what you guys want to hear about. So tell me what you're thinking. You can email me, Darren@5starfitness.com. Send me a message on Instagram @5starfit. Send me a message through the Facebook page, facebook.com/5starphysique. Or you can go to the website, 5starphysique.com, contact form there. You can also find old episodes of the podcast up there. I'm also on YouTube, and I know the URL now. It's youtube.com/user/5starfitness. All that stuff. Also, if you go to the website, it's all linked down there. I've got Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Pinterest, and something else, I think. I don't know. Obviously, I don't have it all down yet. So anyway, I appreciate you all. Return listeners, thank you very much. Return viewers on Facebook and Instagram, thanks for joining in. We'll be back next week, same time. I think this Wednesday at 12:30 Eastern time is going to be a regular time. So I've kind of got my schedule cleared up so we can make that happen. So hope everybody has a great week, and I will look forward to you tuning in next week. Thanks.